this hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Governor Cox this afternoon, and we will be taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Governor, I wanted to start out and ask you about something that you talked about in your monthly press conference today, and that is the possibility of a tuition freeze. Was this some form of announcement, or what
are you
saying?
Sure. Yeah. It's something we've been talking about, thinking about for a while, looking for ways to help families in Utah. We've seen, of course, inflation is rising. The cost of higher education has been rising significantly over the past decade and even longer than that. It's something I'm concerned about. Now, the good news for Utahns is that Utah has one of the lowest rates of higher ed tuitions in the country. We also have some of the lowest rates of student loans in the country. But we can do more. At a time when families are struggling to make ends meet, this is one way where we can encourage more people to improve their lives, improve their education outcomes, and do more with less. We've seen SUU over the past few years has implemented their own tuition freeze, and they've done a really great job of being able to do everything that they need to do with that. Now, this is not a permanent thing that I'm proposing, but for this year, it makes sense to me for everyone to pause, look around, make sure we're doing things the right way, and we're getting the most efficiencies out of the tax dollars that we're spending on higher ed.
Can you be more specific? When you talk tuition freeze, are you talking about increases in tuition, or are you talking about, okay.
Yeah. So I'm talking about no increases in tuition. Most of our universities have increases every year, and some of them fairly significant. And so the proposal is that our public universities would have no tuition increases this coming year.
Is there already one that was proposed?
They haven't submitted their proposals yet. That will be coming up. Yeah. So this will take place again next school year. And those proposals, I believe, usually come in the spring, come to the Board of Higher Education where they have to be approved. And so we'll be working with the board. We'll be working with presidents. But today I just wanted to let them know that I believe. Now, the legislature can do this as well. The legislature could put a tuition freeze in place. But certainly the Board of Higher Education could put a tuition freeze in place. And that's my proposal.
Is this something that you believe the board would do?
I hope so. We'll be talking to them, working with them. They're appointed by the governor, so it would certainly make sense for them to do that. And we'll have those conversations.
How do you feel about the Biden administration and their loan forgiveness plan? How does that work in Utah?
I've been pretty clear on this. I've talked about it a lot. I think it's not great policy. For a couple of reasons. First of all, it does nothing to help inflation. In fact, it does the exact opposite. It will only potentially increase inflation. The second piece of this, again, is that it does nothing to get at the root causes of what we're talking about. I mean, I would love to see the administration lead out on ways that we can make education more affordable for people. That's the issue. Instead, is this, you know, are we just going to do this every 5 years right before an election, 4 years when a president needs help with their party? Are we going to, you know, that doesn't make sense. It's just not good policy. And I think most people agree that it's not good policy. Even if you support it, it's not getting at the root cause. It's not actually helping the problem that is out there. So what we're trying to do is work on solutions. Again, we have the best system, I believe, of higher education in the country. But being the best of a broken system isn't great. There's more we can do.
Yep. There are students who will be aided in Utah. I'm not sure how many will benefit
former students.
Yep. Right. So this doesn't impact those who already have loans because they don't pay them till after they graduate.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
We took our loans in a different way. So I had forgotten about that one little piece.
Yeah.
So talk about inflation. What kinds of things are we doing in the state? Utah definitely better off than a lot of other states, but what kinds of things are we doing?
Yeah, so economically, we talk to economists all across the country, and they will tell you that the two best economies in the country right now are Utah and Idaho, and we're excited about that. That's good news. It means there are good jobs, high-paying jobs out there, but inflation is still impacting families across the board. Unfortunately, so much of the inflationary pressures that are out there are under the purview of the federal government. But the one area where we can make a difference is the cost of housing. And I talked about that today in my press conference. I talk about it often. I get asked about it. In Utah, I like to joke that we want our kids and grandkids to live near us. We don't want them to live with us. And there's a really important distinction there. And if we don't bring down the price of housing, that's it. And Maria, this is really just simple economics. It's supply and demand. When you have more demand than supply, the price goes up. So we need to increase supply. Now, what the federal government, what the Fed has done, the Federal Reserve, is increased interest rates. What that does is to destroy demand, but it's artificial demand destruction. What they're saying is we're going to make capital, we're going to make money too expensive so that people then won't borrow money, won't spend, won't buy houses, and the price of housing will come down. And they're right. The price of housing in Utah is coming down fairly significantly, actually. We've seen big decreases in the asking price of homes. The problem with that is, though, even though people can buy houses now a little cheaper than they could a couple months ago, it's still costing them more because the loan is so expensive. This interest rate. That's not the way we should be doing this. Now, Utah leads the nation in housing starts, but we are working with the League of Cities and Towns, working with the legislature, trying to find policies that will increase supply here, building in the right places, places where we have infrastructure. So we're not lowering the quality of life. But entry-level housing, we're not just talking about deeply affordable housing. That's another discussion, and we have several projects going on there. But we're talking about entry-level housing. So, you know, kids graduate from college, got married, maybe have their first child, they want to buy a house. It's almost impossible to find those starter homes at a price point where people can afford. And that's what's keeping me up at night. And that's what we're working with the legislature on. We will have a couple bills this year. We don't have the final details fleshed out yet, but we will over the next few weeks. And I'm very excited because I think it will make a difference.
Has to be a really tough balance. We're talking about more construction, building more houses at the same time when we don't have enough water.
Right.
We need to be conserving. How do those two things work together?
Yeah, so they can certainly be in conflict done poorly, but if we do them right, and this is where we're trying to align as well. So for example, I was just down in southern Utah, and St. George, fast growing, obvious water problems. And we had a conversation about that. So one of the new policies that we put forward was the first of its kind, a statewide turf buyback program where we give grants to homeowners to remove grass and replace it with waterways landscaping. It's been phenomenally successful. We had a 500% increase in requests for these types of programs. So we need more money for that. But my point is, why on earth would we pay to remove turf when new construction is putting in new turf all the time? That eventually we'll probably have to pay to remove, right? Mm-hmm. Or offer some rebates to remove. So that was the conversation that we were having in southern Utah. Like, look, we want to do more of this, but on the new construction, let's not put in unnecessary and unused turf in these areas. And they agree. That's something that they really want to focus on. So we have to get, one of the other things that I just want to mention is last year, for the first time, we put in a requirement in legislation that cities and towns have to take into account water when approving new subdivisions and new housing permits. Now, you would think that that's kind of a no-brainer, but it had never been required, and there were, sadly, some cities that were not doing that. Now we're getting much smarter about our new development. How much water do we have? What does that look like? Where are we going to put that water? Is water reuse a possibility? Another thing we're working on in southern Utah is reusing that water. I just got back from a few weeks ago from Israel and Dubai, where we met with water managers there. Those are two desert places, desert cities, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Dubai, and Abu Dhabi, where they know how to get the most out of the water they have. And we're taking those lessons back with us, meeting with water managers and working on even new and better policies to conserve. But I do have to give Utah's credit. Billions and billions and billions of gallons were saved last year voluntarily as people cut back.
Right. Governor, let's just move on for just a second. Right now, Hill Air Force Base is holding a press conference about the F-35 crash that occurred there yesterday. What are your thoughts on what happened?
Yeah, so last night I had a briefing with leadership on the base, the commanders there. We talked about the accident, and the best news of all was that the pilot was able to eject with just minor injuries, so he's going to be okay. Other good news is that there was no significant property damage or loss of life anywhere else. All of the systems worked the way that they were supposed to. We don't have, and I don't think they'll be announcing any news around what caused the accident. The conversation I had last night was that it's under investigation. Investigators are on the scene, and as soon as they have they have information, they'll let us know exactly what happened. Whether it was a mechanical failure, accident, you know, pilot error, none of that. I don't know what the answer is right now, but I am grateful. They did have some other planes that were in the air, some other F-35s who landed. And we helped them. Our Air National Guard was involved in making sure that those jets were secure when they landed away from Hill Air Force Base. And the best news of all is that everyone's okay, except maybe some tax dollars that went to a very expensive jet.
Right. That does probably make people a little bit nervous that live
sure.
near Hill Air Force Base. You talked about the systems that were in place. What safety systems are
yeah,
in
yeah.
place?
Yeah, so a couple things. One is that the perimeter around the base is in place exactly for this scenario, to make sure that we don't have homes in that immediate flight path where they're coming in to land or do those maneuvers. So that's, again, to us, that's the great news. There may have been an orchard or two where there some debris was deposited. At least as far as I know, as of last night. So that's good news. I mean, we do have this base, this incredible facility, a very important facility in our state. It is in a residential area, obviously, but it is a very, very large base, and there's a reason that it's a large base, and this is one of those reasons. Emergency responders were on scene very, very quickly to make sure and put the fire out. I think there was about 10 acres there that was burned, and those emergency responders did their jobs, got where they needed to be, when they needed to be there, were able to put that out. Again, rescue teams went, were able to locate the parachute from the pilot that ejected, and all of those things worked the way that they were supposed to. So we're grateful. Again, you know, airplanes sometimes fall out of the sky, and we're just lucky that no one was hurt.
All right, let's take a break. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255. To join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. You can also text us your questions, 57500. Let's go directly to the phone lines. James is waiting patiently. Good afternoon, James. What is your question?
Well, good afternoon, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor Cox. And my question is, I've held on to for a few weeks, it pertains to the National Governors Association. I understand, Governor, you were elected vice chairman of the group. Congratulations. My question is, how often do you confer with your fellow governors on issues of the day, and what are some of the prime issues you discuss?
Well, James, it's great to hear from you, and thank you for that question. So yes, I was back in July. I was elected vice chair of the National Governors Association, which means that next year I'll be the chair. So this year the chair is Governor Phil Murphy from New Jersey. Just wonderful human being, a Democrat. We do alternate, so Democrats one year, Republicans the next year, and every chair has their own initiative, something that they want to work on. Past governors of Utah that have been able to chair that organization, Governor Herbert, Governor Leavitt, both had an opportunity. I believe Governor Murphy is the first governor from New Jersey to ever hold that position. So Utah's very lucky, and we've been very well represented there. And his initiative is on youth mental health. And so he actually, just this week, the last 2 days, he and his wife, the First Lady of New Jersey, Tammy, have been here with Abby and I. And we brought in experts from all over the country. We also had representation from Arkansas, Alabama, New Mexico, different states. Pennsylvania was here as well. I think Minnesota was represented. And we talked about youth mental health and what we can do to increase resiliency, lower the suicide rate and just improve outcomes. It was a wonderful couple of days. So that's one way in which we get together and confer. Another way is every month we hold a call with governors, and we all get on the call together, and we get to pick the chair and the vice chair get to pick topics that we're interested in. This last time we had experts on China come on to talk to us about trade with China, about what's happening between the United States and China, China and Taiwan, China and Russia, some of the hostility that's happening and unfortunately growing in relationships between China and other countries. And it was really fascinating and helpful to us as we're looking at businesses in Utah and other states that are doing business in China. And what does that look like? What does the future of that relationship look like? So that's another way that we get together. And then finally, it's so much fun to have 50 other governors. Somebody recently said that governors are kind of the last adults left in the room when it comes to politics, and that we really are willing to work together across aisles and learn from each other. And so during the pandemic, there were weekly calls, but often I'll just get a text from a governor, my friend, Governor Gordon in Wyoming, Governor Little in Idaho, Governor Ducey down in Arizona. It will just get a text. Something that they're working on, an idea they had or a question they had about something that we're doing, and we try to learn from each other. And that's the best part about the way this nation was set up. You'll remember that we weren't a federal government first. We are states first, and that's the whole point of federalism. That balance has gotten a little out of whack over time, but this idea that we would be laboratories of democracy, so that we would have 50 different experiments going on all the time, and the idea is that we would learn from each other, and hopefully the federal government can learn a little bit more from us, but I'm grateful for my fellow governors and the way that they helped Utah.
Governor, explain for Utahns what it means for you to be the chair of this organization. What does it mean to the state?
Well, it's a big deal for our state. And again, I feel very fortunate that my fellow Republicans, that's who chooses the Republican representation. So of all the Republican governors in the state, as we got together, they decided that they wanted Utah and they wanted me to represent that organization. So it will give me an opportunity again to have a governor's initiative. It certainly brings a spotlight to Utah and the solutions that we're doing here. It's an opportunity for us to share with the rest of the country some of the great research that's happening here, the great policy solutions that are coming from here, some of the wins that we have here in our state. And I think more than anything, it shows the respect that other states have for us. I don't think it was about me. I think it's more about the state of Utah and the great things that they see our economy. They see the things that are being accomplished by amazing entrepreneurs here. And it gets them excited. And so we're excited to share our vision and the things that are happening here with the rest of the country.
We have just a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour news. So let me ask you the first text question, which is, do you have any plans to give stimulus checks to Utah citizens?
Yeah, so we don't have any plans to give stimulus checks. Again, we're trying to improve decrease inflation. And one of the reasons we have so much inflation is because of the stimulus checks that were given out by the federal government. So that's a kind of an anti-inflationary it helps inflation. It's not anti-inflationary. But tax cuts, I do believe, are really important. We, over the past 2 years, past two sessions that I've been governor, together we've had over $350 million in tax cuts, the largest tax cuts in our state's history. And I believe that there is still more we can do. And so I would say pay attention to this legislative session. I'm going to be proposing additional tax cuts, and we'll be working with the legislature to make sure that those tax cuts get implemented.
Are you going to share anything about where those cuts might be made?
Not yet, but I will. Okay. So we're in the process. The way this works, the governor, under the Constitution, I'm required to give a proposed budget to the legislature. Now, ultimately, it's up to the legislature to decide where they want to spend the money. But that budget usually comes out around the first week in December. So we're still gathering all of the data, all of the information, and then we'll be, so just backing up, those tax cuts have come in a couple different versions. provisions. We had tax cuts that went to families. We had two tax cuts that went to seniors and with Social Security. And then we had a tax cut that went to military veterans as well. And then just a general income tax cut. So I think we'll see some more income tax cuts for sure this year. That's what I'm hoping for. And a couple other areas that we're gathering data on.
All right. Let's take a break for the bottom of the hour news. We'll be back with more of your questions. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And again, that number for you to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Russ has been waiting patiently in Wanship. And good morning, Russ. Good afternoon, Russ. What is your question?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Governor. I run a construction company, and we move material back and forth between Wasatch and Summit counties. And my question is there's been a contractor that's had Highway 40 shut down one lane all summer. And I know they're improving the bridge and fixing the concrete, but my question is many times we drive through there, wait a half hour to an hour to get through that congestion. And there's one, maybe two guys working on 5 miles of freeway. Is there any way to require these contractors to put a large crew on there and get the work done faster or even do it at night?
Yeah.
I mean, there's tens of thousands of people that are affected by that big bottleneck that's lasted 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, Russ, thank you for that question. And I'm so sorry. There's a lot of jokes in Utah about the seasons. There's winter and construction being the two seasons. And certainly we are seeing a significant amount of construction happening across the state, which is a good thing. We do pride ourselves on having some of the best roads in the nation, but that comes at a cost. And you're seeing part of that cost. And I'm so sorry that those delays have been happening. We run into this situation where we do road construction a little differently now than we used to do 20, 30 years ago, in that we try to keep lanes open and keep traffic moving instead of shutting things down, even at night. And that always extends the amount of the time that it's going to take to finish those projects. So, with this specific project, I certainly can look into it, and I assure you will. I know we have this project on US 40 that you're talking about. I've been caught in it before. I think we're talking about the same one, kind of on the county line there, and we're replacing bridge decks over the Provo River and several miles of concrete pavement. So it's a big project. It's been taking some time. The good news is that I think there's not going to be any lane restrictions during the winter months, and the project will be wrapped up next year. We've got a big I-80 project that we're working on as well that's taking some time out there, and so I will look into that specific project and see if there's anything we can do to move that contractor up and get things done quickly. We do have contracts with some penalties if people go overtime. I don't know, again, the specifics of this one, but I'm certainly happy to look into it. And thank you for reaching out.
Governor, next, a texter wants to know, with the state surplus, why are we still double taxing Social Security?
Yeah, so I mentioned before that we've had some Social Security tax cuts. When I ran for office, one of the things I promised people is that I would try to get rid of taxing Social Security. Most states do not tax Social Security. We are one of those that does. As I mentioned before, that is one of the places where we did get a tax cut through the legislature. So right now, for if you're married or head of household filer and you make less than $62,000 a year, we removed all taxes on Social Security. So again, if you're married filer making $62,000 or less, you should not be paying any Social Security. If you're single, it's around $37,000, I think, and you won't pay any of that. If you make more than that, it gradually phases out. So the idea behind this is, like, if you're super wealthy and you're getting Social Security, you will still be taxed on that, but everybody else should not be, and it phases out until, again, it's gone at the 62,000 mark. So I'm hoping you'll see that as you file your taxes now, coming up this in April when we all have to file our taxes, that you should see a significant reduction, if not a complete elimination of any taxes on Social Security.
All right, back to our phone lines. Todd is in Ogden, and good afternoon, Todd. What is your question?
Yes, I was wondering, with all the water shortages and the snow not getting any deeper and such, why haven't we had some sort of law or talk about all new subdivisions and construction work all have to have the zero-scape water-wise plants and maybe limited to a little some small grass in the back or something, you know, there, and sort of like Vegas does, instead of, you know, continuing to put all this grass everywhere. My company I work for just put a bunch of grass down, you know, and they don't need it. It's out in the parking lot along in the, you know, in between the park, the areas. So why are we doing that to stop the bleeding, you know, quickly versus not doing anything?
Yeah, Todd, thank you. It's a great question. And let me tell you that those are conversations that are happening in some places. It has already been implemented. In others, it will. Let me just give you just a little bit of background. And this will probably blow your mind. I know it kind of blew mine, but we actually had some municipalities and HOAs that required you to have grass. If you wanted a waterwise landscape, you couldn't even do that. And I thought that was crazy. So we did at least get that changed last year. That's a really big piece of it, making sure now that if you want waterwise landscape, you get to have that. Now, many of our cities are passing these waterwise landscape ordinances, like you mentioned in Vegas. These include, you know, water efficiency standards for fixtures, as well as limiting the amount of non-functional turf grass. That's the piece you're talking about. And I agree. It drives me crazy when I drive by a McDonald's and there's grass on this strip, and the only time anyone ever touches that grass is to mow it, and then there's water watering the sidewalk and the road right next to it. We should not have any of that. I want to give a shout out. I mentioned them already. The Washington County Water Conservancy District down in St. George, they've adopted water efficiency standards and are prohibiting non-functional grass in industrial, commercial, and institutional areas. Residential can only have 8%, so a significant reduction there, and they're looking to do more. We are the only state that offers a statewide rebate for water-saving devices, and we are the first state to offer a statewide turf buyback program, which is going to be launching soon. We're very excited about that. We appreciate you mentioned Las Vegas. The Southern Nevada Water Authority is they are a conservation leader, and we're talking about them. We appreciate the path that they've charted, and we're taking some of their advice and collaboration as we move forward. There are certainly some differences between the way Las Vegas does things and the way Utah does things. We have lots of different water providers, many more than they do, and we're working with each of those. But we're really excited. The state of Utah has implemented a regional water conservation goal that are tailored to every region, and you're going to see much more of what you just talked about.
Governor Larry would like to share his thoughts on zero-scaping. Larry, what are your thoughts? Larry, are you there? Okay, we will go to our next texter then. This person would like to know whether you support the CDC committee's advice to add the COVID vaccine to the childhood immunization schedule.
Yeah, thanks. So I know that came out. We haven't received the official communication on that. I think it's important to note that those are guidelines that are put out nationally. The states get to decide what they're going to put on those lists of the vaccinations that are required. I don't support putting that on Utah's list for lots of different reasons, but the biggest one of which is that this should be a decision that families get to make. Certainly we know that the COVID outcomes with very young children are significantly different than older people. It's not even close, and so I don't think it makes sense to add that as a mandatory one. Of course, we will always make it available, and as families decide that they want to get that vaccine, they're certainly welcome to do that, and we encourage that for anybody that wants to get the vaccine. And this is a great opportunity opportunity for me to remind people as we're heading into flu season that right now is a great time to get your flu vaccine. We're seeing some indications that influenza will be on the rise this year after a couple down years, and also the new COVID vaccine, that the updated COVID vaccine, especially for those that are over the age of 50, really consider doing that. COVID is still, unfortunately, killing far too many people. Most of them are older, and we want to make sure that people stay safe, but we should not be mandating that to younger children.
We will take a break, come back with more of your calls and questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaios, along with Governor Cox. And let's go back to our phone lines. And Brent is in Salt Lake City. And good afternoon, Brent. What is your question?
Yeah, Governor, thanks for taking my call. I talked to you last month on I-201. On how bad the road is. And is where it's bad, it's northbound where you see a sign that says 5300 south, 1¾ mile ahead. Right there where the train tracks go underneath the freeway, there is like a bump. And I'm in a semi, and it just throws you everywhere. It doesn't matter which lane you're in. In your car, it will throw you a little bit, but like if you're in a Cadillac or something luxury, you're not going to really feel the whole effect. And I was just wondering if there's anything UDOT can do to take a look at it, maybe grind it down or feather it out so it's not so bad and throw our freight around.
Yep, Brent, thank you so much. I've got the details now. I think I know exactly where you're referring to, and I appreciate. I got to give a shout out to our semi truck drivers. I had two uncles that were truck drivers. Spent a lot of time with them, and really grateful for your work. We try so hard. I-15, as you know, is our most heavily traveled freeway, and we see about 300,000 vehicles pass through each day, which is just a crazy number. A lot more than I ever understood or expected. And so I've got the details now, and we will get with UDOT and see if we can't get somebody over there to check it out and then get a project on to flatten that out and make sure it's not causing any damage.
All right, thank you for your call. Next listener would like to know what's being done about the rising cost of rents in Utah. They say they can't rent anymore.
Yeah, so again, this goes to the housing discussion, and it's just the other side of the same coin. It's do we have enough units available? And so as we build here, we're not just building homes for people. We're building apartments for rent, making more rentals available. The market will certainly have an impact on that. Right now, we have more home starts per capita than anywhere in the country. But as these rates rise and we see fewer homes being able to be purchased and prices start to come down, what historically we've seen and what we think we'll start to see again is more rental units becoming available. And so that should help alleviate some of the rental crunch that we're seeing here. This is not just a Utah problem. As we met with the National Governors Association, high home prices and rental prices are a problem all across the country in places you wouldn't expect it to. Some places in rural Utah are really struggling with this as well, which we've never had a problem with that before. So it is very unique. Part of that was driven by the pandemic. Part of it was driven by the stimulus. Again, part of it has been driven by just being the fastest growing state in the nation over the past 10 years. All of those things have converged to make it very difficult for people right now, but the same bills that we're working on to reduce the cost of housing will also help to reduce the cost of rents.
Autumn is in Bountiful with a question. Autumn, what's your question for the governor?
I was hoping that lawmakers could help seniors a little more. In my situation, I don't have family, and if I need surgery, I don't have a ride. And I've been going full circle with 211 and also with the Department of Aging, who tells me there is no one, there's nothing in Utah, in there's nothing in place to help seniors that don't have rides to and from any kind of surgeries, because there's responsibility in finding people out, and you cannot take an Uber on and so on. And my other question is, I hope that there'll be plans in the future that lawmakers will get involved to hopefully build a CCRC for seniors. There is none in Utah, but Utah doesn't cater to seniors. The continuing care retirement communities that are here are based basically for nursing homes and not for people that are maybe independent and would like to transition, you know, as they age and pass away.
Autumn, thank you for that. Can you tell me again what that acronym stands for? I know you said it, CCRC. Can you say that one more time, what that stands for?
CCRC, it's a continuing care retirement community in which you, in other states, very popular in every, pretty much every state but Utah. Utah doesn't have such a thing.
Thank you.
And it basically, you have to sign up and move in when you're independent, and then you go from there. But again, and my other question is, I'm wondering if there's a hole in the system where people that don't have family, you know, or anyone that can take them during the day, there is no way to get to and from surgery.
Yeah. Thank you, Autumn. And I'm happy to answer that part of your question. Thank you for the information on the CCRCs. Now, I want to go back to your question about transportation. And certainly, we are aging as a society. Utah is still the youngest state in the nation, but we are getting older. And so these are really important programs to help our seniors make sure that they can get the care that they need. And you've certainly shared with us one of those issues. Now, I can tell you, as a county commissioner in Sanpete County, this was something that we worked on to find transportation for seniors to their surgeries and doctor visits. We have some counties do have these programs. They have some of these programs for people over the age of 60. Eligibility is different depending on the county. Some counties do have a dial a ride program. Now, I think you mentioned you're in Bountiful. So in Davis County, the medical transportation is available to seniors for appointments within Davis County. Now, they currently aren't able to transport outside of Davis County, but they do have a number of the Nutrition and Transportation Office. It's 801-525-5058. And, so I would 801-525-5058. I would encourage you to look there. Extension two, I believe. I'm just getting this information, just looking it up now. Also their website, daviscountyutah.gov, and there's a link there for health, aging, adult services, senior health, and senior medical transportation. So definitely look there, and we'll continue to work with our counties to expand those types of services.
All right, Governor, ballots are arriving in the mail for most Utahns this week. Our next texter would like to know, have you taken a stance on the Senate race in Utah? And if so, what is it?
Sure. So, yes, look, ballots are coming out. It's so important that people get their ballots and that they vote. I was really pleased. We had a poll that was done this past week that talked about how people's faith in elections in Utah. And we saw a significant increase in people trusting elections in the state. 89% of Utahns have trust and faith in our elections. That's up about, I think, about 7 or 8 points over last year. So we're headed in the right direction. I so appreciate our county clerks who have worked so very, very hard in making this all work, making the system work. They are available. If you want to go to your county clerk's office to see how it all works, if you're curious, if you're worried about elections, you want to see the safety measures that are in place, please go check those out. It's very important. I've been asked this question about who I'm supporting. It hasn't changed. I'm a Republican. I support Republicans. I'm supporting Senator Lee. I've talked about that over the past couple months. He's a good friend. We've been very fortunate to have his representation. We don't always agree on everything. And he doesn't always agree with me. I don't always agree with him, but I'm always grateful for his participation. His opponent, I'm sure is a wonderful person. I don't know him very well at all. And that's one of the things that concerned me as I travel around the state. I visited every city and town. I've been to thousands of events over the past 10 years and never seen him at any of those events. And so that has always given me pause, but I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure what I think is not going to impact anybody's vote. I doubt I've changed any minds, when it comes to who people support. And, I'm sure people will vote for whoever they want. But most importantly, I said this when I was running, even if you don't vote for me, it's so important to vote. It is the baseline of our Democratic Republic, and we need people to step up and submit their ballots.
Governor, thanks for being here.
Thank
we'll
you.
See you next month.